Pastoral Care by St. Gregory the Great. Book 3, Chapter 25. How those are to be admonished who decline the office of preaching out of too great humility, and those who seize on it with precipitate haste. Differently to be admonished are those who, though able to preach worthily, are afraid by reason of excessive humility, and those whom imperfection or age forbids to preach, and yet precipitancy impels. For those who, although able to preach with profit, still shrink back through excessive humility, are to be admonished to gather from consideration of a lesser matter how faulty they are in a greater one. For if they were to hide from their indigent neighbors money which they possess themselves, they would undoubtedly show themselves to be promoters of their poor neighbor's calamity. Let them perceive, then, in what guilt those are implicated, who in withholding the word of preaching from their sinning brethren, hide away the remedies of life from dying souls. Whence also a certain wise man says well, "Wisdom that is hid, and treasure that is unseen, what profit is in them both?" Were a famine wasting the people, and they themselves kept hidden grain, undoubtedly they would be the authors of death. Let them consider, therefore, with what punishment they must be visited, who, when souls are perishing from famine of the word, do not supply the bread of grace which they have themselves received. Whence it is also well said through Solomon, "He that hides grain shall be cursed among the people." For to hide grain is to retain with oneself the words of sacred preaching, and every one that does so is cursed among the people, because through his fault of silence only he is condemned in the punishment of many whom he might have corrected. If persons by no means ignorant of the medicinal art were to see a sore that required lancing and yet refused to lance it, certainly, by their mere inactivity, they would be guilty of a brother's death. Let them see, then, in how great guilt they are involved, who, knowing the sores of souls, neglect to cure them by the lancing of words. Whence also it is well said through the prophet, "Cursed is he who keeps back his sword from blood." For to keep back the sword from blood is to hold back the word of preaching from the slaying of the carnal life. Of which sword it is said again, "And my sword shall devour flesh." Let these, therefore, when they keep to themselves the word of preaching, hear with terror the divine sentences against them, to the end that fear may expel fear from their hearts. Let them hear how he that would not lay out his talent lost it, with a sentence of condemnation added. Let them hear how Paul believed himself to be pure from the blood of his neighbors in this, that he did not spare their vices which required to be smitten, saying, "I take you to record this day that I am pure from the blood of all men, for I have not shunned to declare to you all the counsel of God." Let them hear how John is admonished by the angelic voice when it is said, "Let him that hears say, Come," in order, doubtless, that he into whose heart the internal voice has found its way may, by crying aloud, draw others where he himself is carried, lest, even though called, he should find the door shut, if he approaches him that calls him empty. Let them hear how Isaiah, because he had held his peace in the ministry of the word when illuminated by supernal life, light, blamed himself with a loud cry of penitence, saying, "Woe unto me that I have held my peace!" Let them hear how through Solomon the knowledge of preaching is promised to be multiplied to him who is not held back by the vice of torpor, in that whereto he has already attained. For he says, "The soul which blesses shall be made fat, and he that inebriates shall be inebriated also himself." For he that blesses outwardly by preaching receives the fatness of an inward enlargement. And while he does not cease to inebriate the minds of his hearers with the wine of eloquence, he becomes increasingly inebriated with the drought of a multiplied gift. Let them hear how David offered this in the way of gift to God, that he did not hide the grace of preaching which he had received, saying, "Lo, I will not refrain my lips, O Lord, you know. I have not hid your righteousness within my heart. I have declared your truth and your salvation." Let them hear what is said by the bridegroom in his colloquy with the bride. "You that dwells in the gardens, your friends, hearken. Make me to hear your voice." For the church dwells in the gardens, in that she keeps in a state of inward greenness the cultivated nurseries of virtues. And that her friends hearken to her voice is that all the elect desire the word of her preaching, which voice also the bridegroom desires to hear, because he pants for her preaching through the souls of his chosen ones. Let them hear how Moses, when he saw that God was angry with his people and commanded swords to be taken for executing vengeance, declared those to be on God's side who should smite the crimes of the offenders without delay, saying, "If any man is the Lord's, let him join himself to me. Put every man his sword upon his thigh. Go in and out from gate to gate through the midst of the camp, and slay every man his brother and friend and neighbor." For to put sword upon thigh is to set earnestness in preaching before the pleasures of the flesh, so that when anyone is earnest to speak holy words, he must needs have a care to subdue illicit suggestions. But to go from gate to gate is to run to and fro with rebuke from vice to vice, even to every one by which death enters in unto the soul. And to pass through the midst of the camp is to live with such impartiality within the church that one who reproves the sins of offenders turns aside to show favor to no one. Whence also it is rightly added, "Slay every man his brother and friend and neighbor." He in truth slays brother and friend and neighbor, who when he finds what is worthy of punishment, does not spare even those whom he loves, on the score of relationship, from the sword of his rebuke. If then he is said to be God's, who is stirred up by the zeal of divine love to smite vices, he surely denies himself to be God's, who refuses to rebuke the life of the carnal to the utmost of his power. But on the other hand, those whom imperfection or age debars from the office of preaching, and yet precipitancy impels to it, are to be admonished lest, while rashly arrogating to themselves the burden of so great an office, they cut off from themselves the way of subsequent improvement, and while seizing out of season what they are not equal to, they lose even what they might at some time in due season have fulfilled. And to be shown to have justly forfeited their knowledge because of their attempt to display it improperly, they are to be admonished to consider that young birds, if they try to fly before their wings are fully formed, are plunged low down from the place where they fain would have risen on high. They are to be admonished to consider that if on new buildings not yet compacted a weight of timbers be laid, there is built not a habitation, but a ruin. They are to be admonished to consider that if women bring forth their conceived offspring before it is fully formed, they by no means fill houses, but tombs. For hence it is that the truth himself, who could all at once have strengthened whom he would, in order to give an example to his followers, that they should not presume to preach while imperfect, after he had fully instructed his disciples concerning the power of preaching, forthwith added, "But tarry in the city until you be endued with power from on high. For indeed, we tarry together in the city, if we restrain ourselves within the enclosures of our souls from wandering abroad in speech, so that when we are perfectly endued with divine power, we may then go out, as it were, from ourselves abroad, instructing others also. Hence, through a certain wise man, it is said, 'Young man, speak scarcely in your cause, and if you have been twice asked, let your answer have a beginning.' Hence it is that the same, our Redeemer, though in heaven the Creator, and even a teacher of angels in the manifestation of his power, would not become a master of men upon earth before his 30th year, in order, to wit, that he might infuse into the precipitate the force of a most wholesome fear, in that even he himself, who could not slip, did not preach the grace of a perfect life until he was of perfect age. For it is written, 'When he was 12 years old, the child Jesus tarried behind in Jerusalem.' And a little afterwards, it is further said of him when he was sought by his parents, 'They found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, hearing them and asking them questions.' It is therefore to be weighed with vigilant consideration that when Jesus, at 12 years of age, is spoken of as sitting in the midst of the teachers, he is found not teaching, but asking questions. By which example it is plainly shown that none who is weak should venture to teach, if that child was willing to be taught by asking questions, who by the power of his divinity supplied the word of knowledge to his teachers themselves. But when it is said by Paul to his disciple, 'These things command and teach, let no man despise your adolescence,' we must understand that in the language of Holy Writ, youth is sometimes called adolescence, which thing is the sooner evident if we adduce the words of Solomon, who says, 'Rejoice, O young man, in your adolescence.' For unless he meant the same by both words, he would not call him a young man whom he was admonishing in his adolescence." End of chapter 25.